right. Well, good morning. I will tell you who is ready to hear that we are ending this series on parenting, and it is the kids who have had to come with their parents and listen to me talk about parenting. So I'm feeling it for you. Love you. Sorry, we're at the end. So we are wrapping up a study that we started 3 weeks ago on the topic of parenting, and in which we are focusing on three absolutely critical relationships that exist in the lives of all of our kids, and that we as parents are uniquely positioned to really make a huge impact and to radically influence, okay? And we are looking to do that because why? I've pounded this week after week. These relationships are more significant. In fact, they are infinitely more important than any of the other activities, any of the other experiences that we could otherwise involve our kids in or make available to our kids, which means, as a matter of priority, that if we've got too many things going on for this, we got to find less things to do because this is what matters the most. And we started 2 weeks ago by looking at the relationship that our kids have with God. So it was our kids and God. Last week, we said, okay, what about us? And we talked about our kids and us and our relationship with our kids. And today, we're going to talk about our kids and others. That is to say, the relationships that our kids have with other people, kids, but then also hopefully some adults. Who are they doing life with? That's the question. Not who are they mildly associated with, but like who is influencing them the most? Who's of their inner core? Because as we're going to talk about, oh man, does that matter? It makes a huge directional difference in the lives of our kids. So to do this today, I want to look at just one verse out of the book of Proverbs. And I find Proverbs to be kind of really appropriate for this for a couple of reasons. One, personal. But the other one is simply that Solomon is writing, and he's writing as a father, and he's writing to his son. And he's saying, in effect, listen, my son, here's what you need to know. God has miraculously and supernaturally made, apart from Jesus, me, the wisest man who has ever lived. And I've lived a long life full of all kinds of ups and downs. I've had great wealth. I've had all kinds of relationships. I've had all kinds of experiences. And God has given me this insight for living and this wisdom in and through all of this stuff. And what I've done is I've made this deposit in you. I'm writing it all down so that you can have this. This is precious. It is the word of the Lord to you, my son. And it's in the Bible, so it's the word of the Lord for all of us as well. Praise God. It's appropriate for that reason, but it's also appropriate because this was the go-to book for my parents when I was growing up. Like every night at dinner, pretty much every night, we would sit down, we'd have dinner together, and then my dad would take the Bible and he would read from this book. And he wouldn't read for an hour from this book. You know, he didn't fly in experts and we're going to have this guy and he's going to lecture us. He didn't break out commentaries. He's not a Bible scholar, but I'll tell you what, he knows this book. And I found out that he knew this book because when I was about old enough to start reading it for myself, he said, okay, so Tom, because I'm the oldest, he's like, you read it. And so I would read it. It'd be like 3 to 5 verses. We might talk about it for a few minutes. That's all we're talking about here, okay? Not a big onerous thing. But I would read it, and it doesn't speak the way that you naturally speak. And so I'd trip over words, and he would correct me from memory. Mind you, he's like 33. At that time. And I thought, man, this guy, he's got this book down. Which he does. What is this book? It's Wisdom for Living. It's the designer of everything and of everyone coming and saying, okay, just like there are physical laws, like the law of gravity, there are moral laws, there are spiritual laws, there are social laws, there are governmental laws, there are relational laws, there are economic laws, there are parenting laws, there are laws about who you hang out with and just how important these relationships actually are. And I, God, am good and am gracious. And so here's what I do. I don't let you just run into them and bump into them and experience these things and having to figure them out for yourself. No, no, no. I give it to you all on the front end. Here it is. No surprises. Learn how to live skillfully. Dive into this book. Listen to what he says. In Proverbs 13, verse 20, Solomon uses a biblical metaphor, and it's a very popular metaphor. Like you'll see it in other places in the Bible. It is the metaphor of taking a walk. So biblically speaking, life is understood as a walk or a journey that you take literally one step at a time. It works, doesn't it? And what he's going to say is it matters who you're walking with. He says this, whoever what? Whoever walks with the wise, that is to say with people who know how to live life skillfully. Now, where would they learn that? Well, they'd learn it in settings like this. They'd learn it from studying books like Proverbs. They'd learn it from their parents who similarly study books like Proverbs and instill and deposit these kinds of wisdom, this kind of sayings, these kinds of issues into their hearts. Whoever walks with the wise, well, what happens? Well, they become wise. Okay, but the companion of fools, what's the next word? It's the key word. We should say it. I know you don't want to. Just do it begrudgingly. The companion of fools, what? Thank you. I'm like, did I miss that? The companion of fools will suffer harm. Like, he doesn't say the companion of fools sometimes, you know, finds out that it wasn't a good idea. Like, occasionally bad things happen when you're the companion of fools. No. The companion of fools will suffer harm. All of the companions, like not a few. Like, and that's one of the part of the problem is that we think we're going to be the exception to the rule. And he's like, hey, there's no exceptions. This is the way it goes. It's like saying I'm the exception to gravity. You know, no, you'll fall too. Like, it's everybody falls. Like, the companion of fools will suffer harm. So here's the deal. When I was in 10th grade, 16, right, I was a mess of a teenager. Like, a mess of a teenager. I was not just the companion of fools. I was like leading the pack. Like, let's go do foolish stuff today because what the heck? You know, why not, right? And my parents, again, super young, like I'm 16, my dad's 38. I remember him waking me up one morning, which I didn't want to get up, but whatever. So we got in the car and he takes me for this drive and he says, look, you know, tearfully, like, which was a thing for him because we're Dutch, so we're allergic to emotions. I'm not sure I'd ever seen tears, but I got to see a little bit of those tears that day. And he's pleading with me because I'm his boy, right? And he's like, listen, I don't know what to do with you. I went, we feel like we've tried everything. We literally are at, we don't know what to do. So here's the deal. Either you pull it together or I'm sending you away. Actually, like, I have already talked to some military school, and I don't remember where it was, but like Pennsylvania or something, Virginia. Like, I am looking, it's very expensive. I don't care, I'll pay for it. So you've got a decision to make. Do you want to stay with us and amend your behavior? Or do you want to go there and have to amend your behavior there anyway? So it kind of like he had me, you know, on the sharp end of the stick. And I knew one thing for sure. I did not want to go there and amend my behavior. And so 16-year-old mess of Tom was smart enough to figure out that I needed to change my friends because that behavior is what defined the group. So, I mean, if you're going to be a part of the group, you're engaging in the behavior. If you're not engaging in the behavior, you're not a part of the group. And it wasn't that I didn't like those kids or that I thought they were evil, awful people. They were not. But I knew that I had to make a decision for me. And so I said, love you guys, you know, blessings be upon you. But I'm out, right? Like, I am out. I changed my friend group. I went from having friends to having no friends, not inner friends. Like, I had acquaintances. It's not like I didn't know people. But like, I went from having friends that were I'm doing life with to having no one that I'm doing life with to then rebuilding my friend group with a different set of people. And in the process, I became a different Tom. And here's the deal. I'm not commending this idea to you of military school for your kids. Like, don't threaten that stuff unless you are really sure that you want to do it. I mean, we've said that the last couple of weeks. If you draw a line in the sand and you don't mean it, you've just set a trap for yourself, okay? To be honest, I don't think that that was the best move. It worked behaviorally. But it did things in here that were not all that great. So I'm not telling you the story by going, hey, tuck that one away. You know, maybe you can pull the military school thing out on your kids. You know, like, different kids, different situations, maybe some situations, that's the right call. I'm not commenting on that. I'm telling you this story to let you know that even at 16, I knew. If I'm going to change my behavior, I got to change this group right here. Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise. But the companion of fools will suffer harm. And we all know it. And the question is, what are you doing with this knowledge? And if I could just take a break from the parents, so you guys just relax a minute. No more note-taking. Not that anybody was doing that. But anyway, let me talk to the students for a second, because again, I'm so sorry. It's been a rough couple of weeks. I understand that. You know, you've sat there thinking, oh no, is he going to talk about this? And what is he going to, you know, I've been talking around you to your parents for the last couple of weeks. Can I just talk to you directly for a second and plead with you? First of all, I want you to know that if you were or are now 16-year-old Tom, I love kids that are a mess. Totally get kids that are a mess. 16-year-old Tom, 26-year-old, whatever. I don't care whatever your age is. It doesn't matter. And I just want you to know there is like forgiveness for you. There is hope for you. There is joy for you. There is transformation for you. There is all of these things. And all of these things are for you. And can I speak to the adults for a second about the messy kids that are either ours or other people? We need to look at those kids through the lens of the gospel and to see them as absolutely precious, first of all. And secondly, as those that the power of the gospel can easily transform. Paul comes to us and says, listen, you got to understand, like, I have so much faith in the gospel that I'm looking at people who are thieves. They steal from other people. And I am imagining through the lens of the gospel as I look at thieves that they will be people who not just stop stealing and get a job so to support themselves, but they'll stop stealing, get a job, start saving money, live beneath their means, and become people who give money away. That's transformation. So I'm believing for you. But I do want to say to you, whether you're a mess or whether you're not a mess, here's the thing. At some point, you've got to take ownership of your own life, of your own faith, and of these kinds of issues, especially this issue. Like, you've got to take a look at your own friend group for your own self and say, you know what, this is the word of the living God. And truthfully, as I look around, it plays out in pretty much everyone's life. I'm not going to be the exception to this. Are my friends leading me and me together with them, right? I'm leading them in a way that is honestly wise, or am I heading down the path of harm? It's one thing when you're 6 years old, like your parents can step in and go, yeah, you're not going to play with little Johnny anymore because little Johnny is an axe murderer, as it turns out. Like, you know, like, we're not going to go there, you know? Like, but when you're 16 years old, you know, like, and mom comes to you and goes, I don't think you should hang out with that person anymore. Like, look, it's a different conversation. It's hard. Do it for your own self. Start anew and afresh in the Lord. It can be done. I'm living proof. The Lord is coming to us, and he's like, well, let me tell you how this thing works. So no surprises, right? Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm, not might. So now let me now talk to the parents again. Okay, all the kids. Whew, okay, we're good. But we look at this as parents, and we're like, all right, so fine. How do I proactively parent around this principle? Because you are called to be proactive in your parenting around this principle, and you are proactive in lots of other ways. Like, you were super proactive in finding the right pediatrician and super proactive in finding the right neighborhood to live in and what school to send your kids to, and if super proactive in finding the right, you know, gymnastics coach or whatever. Like, we have proven that we know how to be proactive. How can I be proactive with this? And I want to give you three questions that might be helpful to you. And the first of which is, what kind of people do you want to surround your children with? And the biblical answer to that is people who look like Jesus. People who reflect the nature of Jesus and the character of Jesus and the values of Jesus and the affections and the love of Jesus and the hope of Jesus, right? And this is harder to see in a 6-year-old, I'll grant you, than it is in a 16-year-old, okay? As you evaluate your kids' friends. But just because you can't yet see it in the 6-year-old, you can still see it in their mom and dad. And that's then what you're starting to look for then. Paul tells us what to look for in Galatians 5. He compares the deeds of the flesh on the one hand to the fruit of the Spirit on the other hand. And he says in Galatians 5:16, but I say what? Walk. So there's the metaphor. He's saying live how? By the Spirit, and you will not gratify or carry out the desires of the flesh. And then he gives us examples so we can start to get a feel for what that's like. What are you talking about, Paul? Verse 19, he says, now the works of the flesh are evident. What does that mean? It means that you can see them. They're obvious. You see it and you go, oh yeah, that's a work of the flesh, right? Sexual immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, fits of anger, rivalries, dissensions. I'm thinking some of this does apply to six-year-olds actually, okay? Divisions, envy, drunkenness, orgies, and then he says, and things like these. So he's like, non-exhaustive list. Just giving you a feel. But then he continues in verse 22, and he says, but the fruit of the Spirit, that is to say, what the Spirit produces, like a tree produces fruit, the Spirit produces this in the life of someone who is surrendered to the Spirit and seeking after Jesus, imperfectly, but in grace. He says, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness. And what's that last one? It's a booger. Self-control, right? And not only can you see those things when they show up in the life of someone, you can feel them. You can experience them. You can receive them. It's beautiful. And nobody does that perfectly. I certainly don't. I don't think you guys do either, but there's grace for that. You know, we're not trying to surround our kids with perfect people. We're trying to surround our kids with imperfect, grace-filled people who look and smell and touch and act and speak. And some sense, you can see and sense Jesus in their lives. That's what we're looking for. And that's true for the children that we want to surround our kids with. And it's true for the adults that we want to surround our kids with. And guys, it's one of the many benefits of not just attending a church like this, but of actively being involved in a church like this. I mean, take children's ministry, for instance. You, as a parent, should be involved in children's ministry, not just because we all take a vow to raise our kids in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, but really because it's a blessing to you, it's a blessing to your family, and it gets you around these other kids. It blesses other families, and you get to see who the kids are, and you get to meet moms and dads, and you think to yourself, man, we as a family need to get to know these guys. And they would be blessed to get to know you, I suspect. It's why your kids should be involved in student ministries. You know, I mean, you get to be 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 years old. And I mean, if you're a parent, you've been there, if you've had kids that age, you start praying for other people to step in to say the things that you want to say, but they can't hear very well from you. But they get around student ministry leaders like Will and Sophia, and those are people in whom you can see and sense Jesus. It's remarkable the impact that they can have. That's why things like being involved in a community group matters. You know, we practically raised our kids in community groups. Like, we were in community groups basically all the growing up years of our kids, which is not necessarily easy, particularly when, you know, one's a baby and one's eight and the other one's five. You know, like, it's that just, it was busy, it was a lot. But we were in a community group for probably maybe 12 years, maybe 15 years during the bulk of that season. And it was a deal where, like, every Sunday night we showed up at this house. It was a great big house, which was perfect. And these people did not care if we made a mess, which was actually even more perfect because we all made a mess. And we had a ton of kids and a whole bunch of adults. And we sat around this big, enormous table and we potlucked it every Sunday night. Somebody, you know, we just bring, oh, we got the salad this Sunday. We got the dessert. We got the main course. We got the sides. We got whatever. We just have all of this food and we would laugh and joke and tell stories and get to know each other better. Better and better, and then we would go up to the second floor, just the parents, and we would say to the kids, and we had older kids who could watch the younger kids, listen, unless somebody dies or is seriously injured, we don't want to hear or see any of you. Just go have fun. You got the rest of the property. Knock yourself out, which is kind of a safe way of letting them have an adventure, and every kid needs adventures. And it was awesome. You know, I mean, like, our oldest daughter ended up being college roommates with one of them, in each other's weddings. I mean, those kinds of things. These relationships endure and they're enriching. And they create quite the example for your kids as well. One of the other things that we did for our kids, we did a coming of age ceremony for all three of our kids. And so we had like a venue for it. We had it catered. I mean, we made a thing of it. You know, we kind of dressed up. We invited certain key adults to that, like grandparents, parents, obviously. Uncles, aunts, those kinds of folks, but then also people from that community group that I was just talking about. Several. You know, people who have been praying for them since before they were born in some instances. Some teachers, perhaps, or the head of school, perhaps, youth pastor in every case was there. And we invited these people to come, and we had them write something out in advance that was a blessing to them and gave one piece of advice. And one after the next, while our child sat there feeling probably somewhat awkward, you know, spotlight, we had them get up and read it, and then they would give it to him. You know, we prayed for them, and we were trying to create a memorable moment where we're inviting them purposefully into the community of adults. We're inviting them to grow up and equipping them with wisdom that, you know, probably they didn't fully appreciate at the time, but it's amazing how those deposits show up later in life. You know, like you're the parent, and you're kind of cruising through life, and, you know, your son or daughter says something to you, and you're like, that was it right there. My parents have had so many of those moments with me. Was it ever getting through? As it turns out, a lot gets through. So what kind of people do you want to surround your children with? People in whom you can see and sense Jesus. There's your answer. Secondly, what can you do to influence your child's choice of friends? And again, it's different at 6 than it is from 16. 16, you know, it's much, much more complicated. But I think one thing you can do is teach them this principle. Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. And they'll beat the tar out of it, you know, like, but when you see examples of it or give examples in your own life, hey, I was a mess, you know, and like, here's what happened, and this is the difference this made, and talk with them about these things. Secondly, be proactive or proactively monitor your child's relationships and proactively seek to surround them with godly kids and adults. And you're like, well, how do I do that? And frankly, I just explained it all. Get involved in children's ministry. Get involved in student ministry. Get involved in community groups. Like, get ahead of this thing. Look for good families with kids that have the same values as your kids and begin to cultivate those relationships from itty-bitty age all the way up, okay? And I know that you want to say something about this, so I'm going to say it for you, and then I'm going to set it on fire. What you want to say is, I don't have time for that. And what I'm going to say in response is, time is not the problem. Priorities are the problem. 100%. You absolutely have time for it. One of the blessings and cursings of having an iPhone is that every Sunday at 9 o'clock, you get this readout of how much time you've spent per day on average for the last week. Oh, you're up 20% this week. Oh, you're down 15%, you know, and you're feeling better about yourself, right? Like, and then you can dig into the details, and it tells you how much time on social media you spent and how much time you spent reading the news and looking at this and looking at that. And then if you take that time and then you add that to how much time you spend doing all that same stuff on the computer, and then if you take that and then you add that to how much time you spend watching TV, you've just found like 5 hours a day right there, straight up. Am I wrong? And then there's sports and all of these things that are valuable, guys. They're enriching, not knocking them. But if you have to cut something to make room, if you're rightly prioritizing these things, it gets easy really quickly. Time is not the problem. Third thing I think that you can do is you can model this principle in your own life. And you do it by filling your own life, your own inner circle with wise people. And please know, like, your kids are super sharp. Now, they pick up on this stuff. They can identify a fool at a very early age. I'm dead serious. I remember, like, my dad was a salesman, well, I guess he's retired now, but all his life, and he worked for a company that no longer exists called General Development, but it was like a thing in Miami. That's how we got to Miami, and he was the number one salesman in the country, okay? And so he got all the trips, you know, you're number one salesman, you get to go to Jamaica and to Puerto Rico and whatever, and somehow, five-year-old Tom got to go on one of those trips, so I went to Jamaica and Puerto Rico with my parents, which was amazing. It was a one-off. They never took me again. I still don't know why. I'm hoping they'll send me now. I see you out there, right? Like, but there was a guy who was an associate of my dad who I met on the trip, and I'm 5. I've never seen a drunk person in my life. My parents did not drink. I had no idea. I just knew that this guy got hammered from the moment he landed until the moment he left. And I, as a 5-year-old, was embarrassed for this probably 45-year-old man. Actually, I remember saying to my parents, what is wrong with him? What is he doing? Your kids are watching you. It's remarkable. It's intimidating, right? They're these little recording devices. Everybody, I mean, you know this. You say something, they say something. You're like, oh, no, not that word. Surround yourself. Live this out yourself. This isn't just a parenting principle. It is a principle that is universal for all people everywhere. We're just applying it to parenting. Okay, this leads me to my third and final question. This is where the students get upset, and I'm sorry in advance, but I say this because this is dangerous. And the question is, what do you do about the internet? And I know that the internet is not a person, but the internet is populated by people. 99.9999, just run the nines out, percent of which you don't know and you shouldn't trust. And yet, here's what we do. We take the whole world, full of good and full of abject wickedness and all manner of addictive behaviors and things, and we hand it to our kids. Typically without filters, typically without ways to supervise, and even with the filters, it's hard to supervise these things, guys. And we do this even though we ourselves prove regularly that we ourselves can't handle having the world in our own hands. It's just a fact. I mean, if all of us were like super honest about how much of our identity we get from social media, how much time I'm just going to use the word waste, we waste on that. How up and down we go and how much energy and effort we put into presenting our lives to make it look like it's better than it is, because we want that affirmation. And we're like, I don't know, I'm going to go with like 40, you know, like, they can handle that? A U.S. survey from 2 years ago on pornography said that 60% of adults, forget the kids, 60% of adults watch pornography regularly. More than 70% of adults aged 18 to 30, so younger adults, watch online pornography at least once a month. Nearly 60% of college students watch it once a week. So here's what we do. We take that, and we can't handle it, and then we hand it to a middle school boy. When you look at it that way, it doesn't make a lot of sense. You've got to be 21 years old, you know, to buy a beer in Florida. You've got to be 21 to buy cigarettes. Who knew? They get something at least as dangerous, if not more, and highly, highly addictive whenever it is that we give it to them at whatever age. The average of first exposure to pornography on the internet is 11. I honestly thought it would be less, truthfully. When you add to that the documented, absolutely proven, verifiably devastating consequences of social media, not just on us, but far more so on our kids, you end up with the most anxious and depressed generation ever. We're all going, what's different about this generation? Well, nothing's different about them. They're just as human as you and me. They're no more broken, no more less. This is what's different. This is the difference. Jonathan Haidt, who is a social psychologist, he's a professor at New York University, is not a Christian, but he's written a phenomenal book. It's called The Anxious Generation, How the Great Rewiring of Childhood is Causing an Epidemic of Mental Illness, says this. He says that when you look at Americans born after 1995, what you find is that they have extraordinarily high rates of anxiety, depression, self-harm, suicide, and fragility. In fact, he says, there has never been a generation this depressed, anxious, and fragile. And if you look at the blue line, you can see that there has been a 92% increase in anxiety for that age group since 2010. Stunning. Dr. Gene Twenge, who is also a social psychologist, also specializes in this area. Listen to what she says. There are just two activities, two, that are significantly correlated with depression and other suicide-related outcomes. You ready? Number one, electronic device use, smartphones, tablets, computers. And number two, watching TV. There's no number three. Those two things. On the other hand, there are five activities that have inverse relationship with depression, meaning the kids who spend more hours per week on these activities show lower rates of depression. Sports and other forms of exercise. Go to the gym. Go play sports. Attending religious services. Listen, she said it, so there it is. I'm just going to stick with that, right? Studies show reading books and other print media in like physical books, in-person social interactions, and this is a shocker, doing homework. Who'd have thought? And all the kids are like, oh, I hated homework. Does that help? Just couldn't stand it. But maybe it just helps you chill out a little bit. You're like, okay, I accomplished something. B, I got it done. I'm going to be able to turn it in. Maybe I'll be ready for the task. Like, it does kind of lower your anxiety to have it finished. It's not hanging over your head. So maybe you're thinking, all right, so it's terrible. I get it. But what do I do about the internet? I'm going to give you some resources that I'm just going to refer you to because they go into it a lot more so than I'm able to do right now. So Eric Most, who is the headmaster of Bethany Christian School, he's been working with students for years and years and years, and he has read all the books, all the stuff. I ask him for materials. He sends them to me. It is really actually a very beautiful and beneficial relationship on my end, but it is for you as well. He did a sermon last year at this exact same time of year, at the beginning of the school year, just like we're doing now, and we did this study called Next Gen, and we took different issues that are facing this particular generation. Like, you know, I talked about gender, so if you're interested in that, you can go listen to that. But he talked about technology, and the whole message was on that, and what do we do? What is the problem, and what are some approaches to the problem? I commend that to you. We have a digital library on our website. Eric has 9 short videos on digital literacy for parents. Go and listen to that. And I want to refer you also to something called Hang 10. So there is something called the Hang 10 movement. If you want to, you know, pull it up, you can, or take a picture of it, whatever. But I would really commend it to you. The Hang 10 movement, it's a set of 10 technology practices for communities. They're trying to get churches to do this and schools to do this and friend groups to do this. But even if you just look at it and say, how can we do this as a family, okay? It's really good stuff. They want to unlock the gifts of technology while at the same time, man, helping to reduce and stave off its evils. But I'm going to tell you in advance, the first one of the 10 technology practices is do not give your kids one of these or social media till 10th grade. Till 10th grade. It's too dangerous. It's too damaging. Even the state of Florida has figured this out. We're the first state in the union. There are like 8 other states who have either done this or now are doing this, which have banned cell phone use and even Wi-Fi use of social media in schools during school hours. Praise the Lord. I'm super excited about that. But the problem is everybody's looking at the devastation. We're going, whoa, what do we do here? Like, because something needs to be done. And we need to do something. So there it is. As I wrap the message and the study up, I'm going to ask you 4 different questions, okay? Really 5, I added one, but it won't be on the screen. But the first one is, what kind of people are you surrounding your children with? Do they look like Jesus? Secondly, what are you doing to influence your child's choice of friends? And again, it's very different at 6 than it is at 16. Thirdly, what will you do about the internet? And then if I can just stop talking to the parents for a second and talk to the young people. Questions number 4 and 5, which direction are your friends taking you right now? Is it in the direction of wisdom or is it in the direction of harm? And then lastly, what will you do to safeguard your own self from the negative effects of technology? Because it's kind of like at some point, sort of like with the friends, you know, when it's 16, it's like, well, I mean, mom and dad can hopefully influence your choices and whatever, but if you want to get around it, you can and you will. It's the same thing with technology, is it not? Will you humble yourself before the data, before the destruction you see and sense in your own heart and soul and in your friends, and go, yeah, this is, I need to do something about this for my own sake? And then maybe a sixth question, which is, and will you ask for help? I think a lot of us are terrified to talk to our parents about things, you know, and I get that. It's like you don't want to disappoint them. You don't want to anger them. And I mean, maybe there are some parents that are legitimately to be terrified. But I think that for the most part, what you'll discover about parents is that they love you so much, more than any of your friends, like more than anyone else on earth, that they are in it for you. If I'm looking for Team Tom people, oh, come on. My parents are on that all day and night. That they probably already wonder if something's going on anyway. You got to let them be people. They might need to absorb it, but they're here to help. They want to help. So put them to work. If you're addicted to porn, tell your mom and dad. And if you can't tell your mom and dad that, then come and talk to our student ministry leaders, Will and Sophia, and tell them, and let us help you. If you are getting crushed by social media, talk to your parents about this, guys. I mean, there's all kinds of resources and things that can be brought to help you get out of this. If you are way more anxious and depressed than they realize that you are, I mean, first of all, they probably realize more than you think, but nevertheless, tell them about it and let them help you. They're here to help you. We're here to help you. And we're all in this thing together. Look, anybody who's lived a little life, you know, finds it hard to be surprised at some point by too many things. Here's what we'll discover. Oh, you're human. Oh, got that. And you have my DNA? I'm so sorry. You know, like my parents are like, yeah, we know. But really, we won't be as shocked or surprised or crazy as you might imagine. And if you're the parent in that situation, then prove to your child that you will not overreact, that you can handle it. You may need to control it out here, okay? But don't freak out. Talk to them. Lead them. Help them. Work with them. And see what the Lord does. Look, at some point, all of us have to encounter God's truth for ourselves and the freedoms that Jesus offers. And hey, here's the great thing, and it's true for all of us, parents, non-parents, kids, whatever. Here's his posture. It's this. He takes all comers, Jesus. Heals all manner of wounds. Forgives every sin to the very depths. And he loves you far more than you can even imagine and way more than any one of us deserves, and yet it's real. So come to him, utilize mom and dad, and mom and dad, let's utilize each other, okay? All right, let me pray. And Lord, we thank you for your word, for in it we find life. God, you have not hidden from us the things that we need to know to be able to avoid the perils of life and to enjoy the blessings. You come to us with wisdom and skill for living, seeking to help us live and design lives that in the end reflect you, and we praise you for it. God, I thank you for parents. Tough assignment being a parent, greatest blessing of your life and most terrifying thing you end up doing. Give us wisdom to play the long game with our kids. Give us humility. Let us not anchor our ego to how well they do. Let us be fearless, knowing that we raise them with a good God and to whom we entrust them in prayer day upon day upon day upon day. Let us repent to our kids where we make mistakes. Show them what an imperfect life chasing after Jesus looks like. love them desperately when they fall and help point them to the only hope there is, but one that does not fail, and the hope that we reflect and manifest in our own lives. And I pray for the students here today, Lord, that you would wrap them up in your arms, that they would feel and see and sense your love for them, that your blessing and benediction over their lives, that they would by faith realize that you speak the truth, and that you've given them your word and your spirit. You've given them your son for their forgiveness and covering. You've given them their parents to lead them and love them and guide them. And you've given them a church that believes in their future and sees and looks at them through the lenses of the gospel that allow us to look at kids who might be a mess and to see what could be. So, Lord, do your work. Wherever we're at, meet us or be what we need. Grant us wisdom and do your work, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.